Yeah, well, it was a survival activity, and you know, we are the 16-year overnight success. So there's a long history there. Now, what happened was I was in tech, knew the space well. I was the number two of a company that we got onto the NASDAQ. But I saw flaws in it. I was like, this thing, you know, it's got inherent flaws and I can't fix them. Time for me to be a CEO myself. Because you can only criticize so much before somebody says, well, why don't you do something about it? So, fortunately, I had some finance people who that ran a fund that were like, yeah, they believed in me. They liked my style. They said, yeah, you can be a CEO, but we're not doing tech anymore. We're doing green. And we want you to, we think there's huge potential in a biofuels from algae.
Welcome back to the Intelligent Conversations podcast. Today, I have the honor to learn from Riggs Eckelberry. Riggs is the founder of Origin Clear, which is a public company. Riggs has developed innovative solutions to help businesses facing rising water bills by tapping into new investment markets. He is even pioneering the development of water stablecoins, a cryptocurrency backed by water assets. With a diverse background in nonprofit management, ocean-going navigation, and technology disruption, Riggs is uniquely qualified to bring change to an outdated and overrun industry. Riggs in this episode was fantastic. You can just tell that he has just such a depth of knowledge when it comes to the water industry. And it's so cool to see that. He loves taking the approach of innovation and finding a better way to disrupt a market that hasn't been touched in decades, if not centuries. I'm not going to spoil any of the rest of the show, but without further ado, let's welcome Riggs Eckelberry to the show. Well, thank you for coming on. I'm really excited to just learn as much as I can. I only do this podcast for three reasons. Number one, I try to keep the audience in mind. Number two, I hope you have a great experience. Number three, and this is my selfish reason, I get to learn from fascinating people. So it's just, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to come on.
Yeah. And likewise, I get a lot of, you know, because you podcast hosts get so much exposure, it adds a dimension to what I, what I'm doing, what I'm talking about. A lot of the bright ideas we get come out of these. So it's a lot of fun.
Oh, that's good. Well, hopefully I can help get some ideas or help you generate some ideas. Because I listened to a few podcasts you've been on before, and it seems like you're always finding like you're three steps ahead. And I even went to your like stalked you on LinkedIn. I hope you're okay with that. And I saw a lot of the things people were saying about you were you're like 3 years ahead, like three steps ahead when it
Sometimes
comes to technology.
Too far ahead.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Well, I just, you know, I think, you know, we can talk about it on the show, but basically, you know, my early nonprofit work really kind of had me, I don't want to just run a business, right? I want to make a difference, change the world. That was why I was in technology since the 80s and then got involved in, the green and the blue industries and so forth, because everything is turning to tech right now. Everything's being disrupted. Everything's being changed, and it's happening faster and faster. And I just see like how I would like something to be. That's kind of my idea of the future, right? And then how do you make it happen? How do you find the leverage, move the needle, and so forth?
That's a great question, right? How do you? Because sometimes, right, you have this idea, this vision, like you kind of said, for a product or a company, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. How do you, I guess, kind of get other people to see that vision as well and get them to work in unison?
It's got to find some workability, and it has to resonate with workability. In other words, it can't just be, oh, what about this? You know, it's got to be something you go, oh, yeah, it clicks for them, right? And then if it clicks, there's some workability to it. I think that's the brilliance of Elon Musk, is that what he does, it works in engineering style, kind of sense. Things work, right? He's got these bright ideas, but then he actually, you know, executes it. And it's a very astonishing process to watch, and very humbling, since, you know, I'm not likely to approach where he's gotten. But on the other hand, I think I act in different ways, and hopefully kind of put my shoulder to the wheel too. So anyway, these are such interesting times, so much change happening, and more and more chaotic and noisy. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's for sure. Oh yeah. It's a lot of noise, and it seems like every week, right? You get, or every day for that matter, you get a new update of this is what's new in tech, or this is being disrupted as we speak, and it's going to change everything. I remember, I don't know if you saw this, but it was something, I don't know if you've been following the whole AI stuff, but it's like they showed companies out of Silicon Valley and how long it took them to reach 1 billion users. And it was like Facebook, 13 years, and then like Snapchat, 5, Instagram, 3, and it just slowly is getting smaller and smaller. And then it was like ChatGPT, like 4 days. And it was,
well, they're building on top of existing channels, right? So it's really more about the channels of communication that are built, because for Facebook, there was MySpace. It was nothing. It was like, you know, promoting bands. I mean, it was just, and you get, you know, Facebook was a major step forward in privacy invasion. I mean, customer adoption, and you know, Google, same thing. I mean, so there's been this sort of interweb created. What astonishes me is it's still very diverse. In other words, it's not as monolithic as I expected. There's a tremendous amount of, a lot of it's bullshit, but there's a lot of chatter out there that's pretty open. Mm-hmm. I think we're very lucky in America that we have a pretty open agora, as opposed to places like Brazil, where it's really being repressed. And I'm really fascinated by what's happening on X, what's happening in Telegram, what's happening on Substack. People like Matt Taibbi are just amazing people, you know, legit, Glenn Greenwald, legitimate reporters who nevertheless are critical thinkers. It's amazing.
Yeah. And it seems to be something that's, I don't know, would you say that's something that seems to be lacking? I could be wrong there, but it seems like we get kind of funneled into these groups of people. And I mean, social media definitely doesn't help with that. We get kind of funneled into this group and a way of thinking, and we never actually challenge our views. That's why I actually enjoy diving into the comment sections of posts, because you'll find there's always that one person that throws something out there, and then you kind of get to see how other people react to that and kind of digest that information.
You're absolutely right. I find some of the, it used to be that most common threads were shit, but I think somehow we've matured that, or else the curation is better. I don't know what's going on, but I'll read a post by a good ex-poster like Kobasi Letter, who's a very good economic poster. And then the people commenting like are taking it, like you say, in new directions, like, well, if this, fine, and hyperinflation, blah, 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 but what about this, right? And that's what makes it, I think you're right, it makes it very, very interesting.
Oh, yeah, the comments. Like you said, some of it's a load of garbage, right? There's just trolls, and you get the
fun We're better
fun
able
stuff.
To take care of ourselves than people think. And I could tell garbage, come on, I know what's going on, right? Okay, this person's a POS. So what? Move on. And, you know, don't, that's why I'm a big, you know, I'm big on free speech, only because we are adults. Leave us alone, right? Leave the kids alone.
I like that. So tell me more about your water company and how you kind of got into that, because you were in the, so just to kind of recap, from what I understand, you dived into like software and technology companies and did all that. How do you kind of move into water and trying to disrupt that space? Because that leap didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, well, it was a survival activity. And, you know, we are the 16-year overnight success. So there's a long history there. Now, what happened was I was in tech, knew the space well. I was the number two of a company that we got onto the NASDAQ. But I saw flaws in it. I was like, this thing, you know, it's got inherent flaws and I can't fix them. time for me to be a CEO myself, because you can only criticize so much before somebody says, well, what, why don't you do something about it? So fortunately, I had some finance people that ran a fund that were like, yeah, they believed in me. They liked my style. and they said, yeah, you can be a CEO, but we're not doing tech anymore. We're doing green. And we want you to, we think there's huge potential in a biofuels from algae, which remains super exciting as a direction, because you're not changing the internal combustion engine. You're just replacing it with something that's carbon neutral as a fuel. And I had a very exciting time because the press loved it. Back then we had mainstream media, believe it or not. And Stuart Varney called me, I'll call you Algiman. It was fun. The problem was that fracking came along and nuked the price of oil. Oil went from 120 a barrel to like below 50. And we looked at it and was like, you know what? Algae for biofuels is just a science experiment. And this is a public company. We can't mm-hmm. play around with investor money. So we decided to take our technology for filtering out solids, meaning algae, and put it to work filtering out sewage solids. And that was our technology approach for a number of years. And however, I came to a realization while we were doing this. We were doing a straight technology licensing play. I've got a very brilliant brother who did interesting work in that area. And we had this interesting technology play. But I found out that the water industry is very does not accept new technology easily. It takes a long time. And I wasn't willing to wait around. So we decided not to, basically, I let my brother do his thing with it, completely said, you go for it, dude. And he actually did a wonderful job with it, working with another partner. And we instead focused more on the business structure of water, because there's a sea change occurring, and we started seeing it, really, I started preaching it in 2016, where infrastructure is becoming so underfunded and so broken, and the unfunded mandates and grossly toxic waters like all the lead that they're discovering in school water systems. It was just horrendous what's going on. And it's just the money is not being spent on the freaking water. It's being spent on whatever else. I think rural bandwidth is really important, but water is more important, right? So so the priorities, I think, are skewed, mainly because people have a very complacent attitude towards water. It's like, hey, it's there. I turn on the tap, the water comes out, I flush the toilet, goes away. What's the big deal? Well, there is a big deal. Water and sewage rates are skyrocketing. They're inflating at the speed faster than they've now overtaken college tuition and health services in terms of inflation. It's ridiculous. And so now there's all this cutting off of, you know, all the people who can't pay their bills are being cut off. And people are on bottled water in their homes. I mean, this is gets the worse and worse. So the solution is very simple. 90% of the demand for water is by industry and agriculture. Take them off the grid. Let them process their own dirty water. This whole idea of sending your polluted water to some central location to be treated is a very early 20th century concept, right? No, we now have the technology to do it right in place, and that is far better ecologically. It's kind of like mainframes versus PCs, right? Now you're able to just, these businesses can take care of their own polluted water. You're not overwhelming the municipality anymore. They save money on water rates because they can recycle. There's no other way they can do it, recycle. And they don't get the inflation problem. So it's a win-win for business. This is how the municipalities will get out of their terrible hole. And so we became devoted to decentralization. We bought a company in 2015 that does that for a large custom projects like power plants. And then we created a company around an amazing guru, Daniel Early, who had been doing decentralized water for mm-hmm. 20 years in the dark, so to speak. And we created a company called Modular Water, which is these pods. Just drop the semi truck comes along, you got a pad, you drop it on the pad, plug in the water and power, and boom, you're treating the housing development or mobile home park or brewery or whatever it is just instantly. And that is, after a slow start, it took us from 2018 to 2021 to just become profitable. But then now it's just cranking, and he has achieved enormous acceptance for his patented technology. So that was the second part, was these modular scalable systems. And the third part we came up with during COVID, where we really feared, this is before all the big CARES Act stuff happened. We thought there was going to be not enough capital. Well, it turned out way too much capital. But at the time, we thought that capital was a problem. But in fact, the idea is still really important, which is if you want to cut the cord and do your own water treatment, wouldn't it be the simplest if you just switched meters? You're sending the water to the city on a meter. Now you're treating it yourself on a meter. In other words, you don't pay any capital expense, somebody else's. And that machine that's on your premises is not your machine. It's the machine of the service provider. And that's called water on demand. It's a water as a service concept, which is not new. But what made it new, how we made it a new thing, was we opened it up to regular investors, like an oil well kind of royalty play, right? And that is really interesting. People like that. They like, you go, you know, it's just like a master limited partnership, but it's not oil, it's water. And they go, wow, that's cool. So it's, there's a lack of good investment vehicles for you and me, basically. You know, Ashton Kutcher, he's good, right? He's in on all the, he was early in on Airbnb, made 157,000% on his money because he was tied up with Sequoia. Well, you and I are not tied up with Sequoia. Sorry.
Yeah.
Maybe you are, but I'm not. and so what's our access? Where's our sweet deals? Where's our 10,000, 20,000, 100,000% gains? They're not out there. So water is, you realize that what we're doing here is demonopolizing water. We're breaking up monopoly because this is, the city has been treating these businesses waters, right? Not doing a good job, blah, blah, blah. Now they go off the grid. Now they're being treated by a private party. Well, now you've privatized water management, right? And so that anytime you do these demonopolization, like what happened with AT&T, you create huge markets because all kinds of interesting new things get done. Like, for example, let's take Uber, right? Uber did not destroy the taxi industry. It just dramatically increased how much you use rented cars, hire cars, right? I don't normally take taxis, and I wouldn't have, but Uber, yeah. And so there's still a place for taxis, but the Uber thing has dramatically opened up the marketplace and created, you know, employment for people and so forth. So it's interesting when you break up these tight monopolies.
Yeah, they allow other people to kind of participate. Right, kind of what you said, right? Get employed or also participate in this thing is doing kind of a public good in some sort of way. And so this was a question I had, and I mean, I hate to break it back, but how did the water companies in the first place become this monopoly to begin with? And because I know you're trying to take them on now, and you're essentially, I don't want to use this word, but like you're decentralizing it.
Sure.
And so like, how did those companies start to begin with? And has it been hard for you to try and break them up to begin with?
Let's take, for example, early Manhattan, which, you know, you start a city, you need a sewage system. And you know that the local water company, Chase Manhattan, was actually before they became a bank, they were a sewage company.
Really?
Yes. They found that being a bank was much easier and more profitable. But you sort of like, well, we gotta take care of all the poop, right? Primarily, it's a residential issue. And then as America industrialized, it kind of defaulted to the industrial waste going to the same place. And so it became these larger and larger and larger mega systems. 86% of America's waste is handled by only 15% of the water treatment systems. These are giant, like in LA, the Hyperion system down by the ocean. You'll see them, these enormous setups. And the idea at the time was to concentrate expertise and resources and control and make sure that the standards were high. Technology was lacking to downscale these activities for a local brewery. How do you put it in a 500 square foot footprint? And it just wasn't the technologies that were lacking, the sensors were lacking, all kinds of things. So the same way that the PC revolution had to wait for some big breakthroughs in PCs, such as, you know,
the trend,
you know, it's the invention of the chip clock, of the clock, literally how to time transactions, all these various things eventually made it possible to have a self-standing mainframe on your desk. And then boom, it just took off. So technology enables this. And that's what happened with water. Basically today you can install a local system, you get permitted by the city, and you're on your own. Boom, you're rolling, and you get, you know, you get inspected, whatever. But it's just like running any kind of service, or running solar on your roof. It's the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
they couldn't do solar until solar became cheap enough to do yourself, because for a long time it was super expensive. So. It's viable, and we know how it's done, and we have been leaders in because we there's players in the high end, you know, who do these pharma and food and beverage and so forth, and that's great. But the great majority of the sites are these mid-ground, right, where it's 5, 10, 20,000 gallons per day, and you can't spend 2 years putting one of those up. You got to just build it and then roll it out like a mobile home. And,
okay. Yeah. I follow that. I mean, that's a cool concept that you can just, so you produce it, I'm guessing, within a factory, and then you ship it out to the location you want around water, and then pump it from there. I mean, that makes a lot more sense. I mean, to get all the, like, the permits, especially around water, to just get it to work in the first place, and then build on that land as well, is also a nightmare.
Well, for example, in Texas, we have TCEQ, Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, they're the state EPA, has approved our 5,000 gallon per day box. So it's kind of like, wow. It's pre-approved. Boom, it's done. We don't have to worry about, they don't know, what is this? They know, oh, that's that thing that's already been, because they're all identical. And now we're rolling out. There's a lot of mobile home park upgrades occurring, where a lot of them have been on what's called passive water treatment, which basically means throwing all the poop in a lagoon or septic tanks. And both of those alternatives are not very ecological. And so Texas is driving these MHPs to upgrade to true water treatment, little micro utilities in an MHP kind of thing. And so we're partnering with a company that does a tremendous number of these to just rip through and go 5,000 gallons, 5,000 gallons, 5,000 gallons, 5,000 gallons, and boom, they're all done. It's all the same. The Texas regulators, you know, recognize it, and then we add to it the investment side, where we finance it, and so we drop it in, and the HOA, you know, pays for it. End of story, right? So there's no capital, like figuring out where the $1 million is going to come from. It's like that goes away. That's our problem, and of course, it's our opportunity, because there's a lot more money in financing than there is in equipment. That's why GM Financial is more profitable than GM, right? Even though they're synergistic, this, you still want GM, but the juice is in the finance.
Gotcha. That's what makes the makes it work. That's cool. So is this like, this is just kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, but is this open for anyone to kind of get involved with this, or is there certain like people you're looking for that would, this would benefit?
Okay. Well, there's two sides. One is the actual end users, and we, the way the water industry is organized is you have manufacturing sales reps, and they are multi-line. So they'll have multiple clients like us, and we're good. And in their dashboard, we do a certain thing well, right? So whenever that thing comes along, boom, oh, okay, that's good for modular water. So they do, we rarely, in fact, it almost never happens that we do a deal directly with an end user, because what the consulting engineers that they hire plus the manufacturing sales rep that recommends a system do a lot of education of the customer and managing of the customer. So we're able to deal with the problem itself, not with all the handholding. So that's very much how it works. You know, if you're interested in, you know, getting a system, then, you know, you basically, you find a consulting engineer in your neighborhood, hire them to do the survey, and they know exactly what to do. Okay. Now the other side of it is the investment side. And we are very, very good at working with retail investors, meaning everyday people. And there's two big categories. The first category is the people who qualify as accredited, and they have to be making $200,000 a year or $300,000 with their spouse or cohabitant, or have $1 million net worth outside of their primary home. Now, obviously, that's a minority, right? I mean, there's a lot of people make $200,000, but still it's
narrowed, a small.
Yeah, it narrows it tremendously. And so that's been our primary public. But then we occasionally we do these crowdfundings where we bring in people of, anybody can join as long as they invest no more than 10% of their annual income per year. So let's say making $40,000 a year, you can invest $4,000 up to $4,000, and that's a special offer for them. It's called Regulation A. And in fact, we're about to launch one. They have a tremendous synergy with the accredited ones, because when you go after accredited investors, you get a lot of unaccredited investors. It's just how it is. It's very, very hard to filter out and to get to the quote unquote right people. Well, fine, but if you can. If you got something for everyone, then it makes it much, much easier. So people can currently get an annuity generating investment with a lot of equity and great package by simply investing as an accredited investor today. They could just go to originclear.com and there's an investment button. But soon we expect to have crowdfunding up and running, and we've actually created a partnership with the original shark, Kevin Harrington. He got very excited about this.
Oh, nice.
He's going to be the face of this crowdfunding. And we just want to get a lot of people on board, give them a piece of this. Two things. Origin Clear is the company creation platform that we create companies and we get them funded. And then the company we created, Water on Demand, which is now on pace to get onto the NASDAQ through this merger, they get a piece of that too through the either directly as credit investors or indirectly as unaccredited investors through their ownership of Origin Clear. And so now they're participating. And so they get to have fun with it and perhaps make some money. We think they will. The way it's structured, it's beautifully structured. And then we get a lot of, you know, you want to raise, if you really want to get serious, you're going to raise very large amounts of money, but it's really helpful to have the ability to do things, you know, FU type money, where like you don't have to an institution, get them all, you get a lot done, and then you can go to the institutions when, you know, NASDAQ and so forth. So it's inevitable we will get institutional money, but we really rely on and we love our everyday investors.
That's cool. And I mean, I like that because it gets, I think the more people that get involved in something, the better, I think one, you'll get more exposed to more ideas.
Sure.
But two, you'll also, sorry, I just lost my train of thought. No.
Well, the beauty of a movement, right? It's like a mm-hmm. lot of small political donations is better than a few fat cats. And you get this, it's almost metaphysical in a way, right?
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people behind you kind of thing is very, very positive, I think.
Oh, no, for sure. Just having people behind you. And I would also say one of the, I don't know if you do this, but one of the benefits with being exposed to various people with various backgrounds is that they're going to share their ideas. And you also can collect, I don't want to say data, but like information, right? Saying, mm-hmm. Hey, what do you guys think about XYZ that we're doing right now? Right? People send in like, hey, I think you're doing this great. Or, hey, you should fix this. Or maybe, right? You get that feedback. And then the more people you have, right? The more accurate, I would say, that data is going to be to begin with. But I could be completely wrong.
No. In fact, for a long time, we've been running this weekly Zoom every Thursday night where people, obviously register and they listen in. And of course, we get all these comments and suggestions. And we have a fairly freewheeling, get the execs in, and then we're discussing what's happening with the company and so forth. And people, first of all, really like hearing what's happening with the company live as opposed to some press release mm-hmm. and every single week. And secondly, they themselves contribute value to us. So we're informing people, but we're also, like you say, getting a lot of guidance. And then, of course, at the end, they do a survey. And this I think, creates a lot of community for what we're doing and a lot of agreement that this is a good thing. And then people will say, oh, why don't you do this? And they're like, you know what? That's not a bad idea. And we'll put it in the system. So I'm a strong believer in, number one, having a lot of supporters, and number two, having a forum, a regular forum in which people can hear and talk and contribute.
And share those ideas ultimately, right? Yeah, that's the one of the best things you can have is maybe a leader, I would say, is having, that feedback and also just that forum for people to share their thoughts. So I want to respect your time, but this is kind of my last question. For someone that wants to, let's say, take their career, and you've had a phenomenal career, and like, let's say, be a CEO, start their own company, what would you say are three skills that they would need to be an exceptional leader?
Okay. The first skill, I think, is being willing to be creatively different. By creatively different, I mean not just different for the hell of it, but actually different in a way that is going to move the ball down the field, right? And that's very hard to do because you have this, change is good, but change can also be a source of randomness and get people all confused in your company stuff. So have a vision, number one, and that's super important. Number two, be willing to change, but in a way that is creatively purposeful. And number three is you then want to constantly inculcate it into your people, your own work, vendor community and so forth, the public, the investing public. In other words, that vision and how it's evolving. I mean, this is, again, I admire Elon Musk because he'll say it right there on his X feed, about some idea he has for a new car.
It's really cool, right?
This levitating car that he's got going now. And yeah. This is very rational, right? This is how you do it, is vision, constant revision, and then communicating it and continuing to communicate it. And then it's a circular thing. It comes back because, as you say, you get the bright ideas from communicating with your audience, because it's got to be two ways, and boom, it comes back to you know, improving the vision and so forth. And that's, I think, where you create something that really makes a difference.
And that's what we all, I think, I mean, this is my personal opinion, but we all want to make a difference, right? Make change in the world. And
what's the point otherwise, right?
Exactly. Well, Riggs, thank you for taking the time to come on and share just so much knowledge that I think we can benefit from. If people want to reach out to you, find your company, all that fun stuff, what's the best way that they can do that?
Well, the best thing is go to Origin Clear. You'll be invited to join our weekly Thursday night briefing. It's 8 p.m. Eastern, which for a lot of people doesn't work well, but there's a replay the next day and it's all nicely edited. And so you get a chance to listen in on what's going on with the company. If you join live, you'll be able to contribute. And so I strongly recommend that. And you can also, you know, email us at invest@originclear.com to find out ways to invest, or just click on the green invest button. But also please, my Twitter, Riggs Eck, do join, because I'll talk about just about everything.
That's cool.
I have a very miscellaneous mind. And then, same thing with Facebook, Origin Clear, LinkedIn, Origin Clear, Instagram. And we have lots of fun stuff happening. So I do hope your audience joins in.
Oh no, for sure. Well, thank you. Thank you for, taking the time to come on today, Riggs.
Josh, such a pleasure. Thank you. And, you know, 6 months or a year, let's talk again and see where things have gone.
All right, everyone, as you can tell, that is Riggs Eckleberry. He's a very intelligent person, has great things to share. I challenge you guys, if anything spoke you, to reach out to him. I'm sure he'd be happy to help and answer your questions. If you're interested in his company, Origin Clear, he left you there some information to stay updated and learn more about his company. Stay tuned till next week. We have a great guest lined up for you guys. See you guys next week, and let's get after it.
Hey everyone, if you liked this episode and would like to hear more, be sure to hit that subscribe or follow button. We release a new episode every Wednesday for you guys to listen to. Thank you guys so much for the support that you give. We could not have done this without you guys. If you would like to be a potential guest on the show, check out intelligentconvos.com and fill out the form there. Thank you guys again, and let's get after it.